Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello, welcome, come on in. We are here again to talk more football on screen with another episode of Real Football. Today we are talking about Diego Maradona, the iconic, the legendary El Pibe de Oro, but also the 2019 documentary directed by Asif Kapadia. I'm very excited for this one, I have to say. In my books, this is possibly, probably the greatest football documentary ever made. I said it, I threw it out there, I'm doing it early, and I'm not taking it back. I'm joined today by Dr. Pete Watson, lecturer in Spanish and Latin American studies at the University of Leeds, and also the expert on everything related to South American football. Hello, Pete. How are you today? Are you ready to talk things, all things Maradona?
Yeah, no, really excited. It's back in the day, I think with Steve, actually, we did a talk about Maradona after he died. So it's good to talk about some of the kind of films and the popular culture influences that he left behind. And again, the Kapadia documentary is a masterpiece in lots of ways that I'm looking forward to talking about.
Well said. And it's the voice of BBC Merseyside. It's been a while, Stephen Scragg. How are you?
It has been a while, hasn't it? Good to see you both. Looking forward to this. I can't disagree with you on the quality of this particular documentary, Matthew. It was, I don't know, it's just so brutally raw and glorious for every single minute of it.
Exactly. That is very well said. And so today we're talking Maradona, specifically the 2019 documentary directed by Asif Kapadia. This movie documents Maradona's time in Italy with Napoli in the 1980s, featuring what was, at the time of release, a never-before-seen archival footage. Director Asif Kapadia had previously directed a whole bunch of stuff, really, but he's best known for Amy, the 2015 doc that covers the life and death of Amy Winehouse, and also the 2010 documentary Senna, similarly covering the life and death of F1 driver Ayrton Senna. Both documentaries are fantastic. I could not care less about Formula One myself. I'm not a car man. But that Ayrton Senna documentary grabbed me and shook me like a rag doll the first time I watched it. It's amazing. And with Amy, it forms a sort of unofficial trilogy of flawed geniuses. And the making of Diego Maradona is pretty fascinating itself. Kapadia circled this project for a number of years, but the footage had obviously existed for decades. And it was Maradona's agent, and I'm going to butcher this name. I don't know how to pronounce it. Jorge Cito Spieler. More on him later, who essentially had the idea to film Maradona with the intention of making a documentary or a movie out of it. They hired two Argentinian cameramen to follow Maradona around, on and off the pitch. They began in 1981 and filmed for a number of years, but the project was never realised. In comes Kapadia and his producing partner, Paul Martin, who managed to find half of the footage, half of the tapes in Naples, and the other half in a trunk in Buenos Aires in the back room of Maradona's ex-wife, Claudia Villafania. So Kapadia was able to meet with Maradona a number of times to interview him for the documentary. And to absolutely no one's surprise, he was incredibly awkward and difficult to pin down and talk to. But the finished project in my book is electrifying. It's an amazing documentary. I love it. It is triumphant and tragic in equal measure and is delivered in such a way that we revel in how talented and amazing Maradona could be, but also horrified and powerless watching him destroy his own life. For you, Stephen, where does this rank in the pantheon of footballing documentaries?
I think, like you said before, it's way up there. Given that this is the subject matter for us tonight, I can't think off the top of my head of one that's as comparable. You know, if I was given thinking time, you know, I might be able to have a ponder of it. In the middle of the night, if I'm disturbed in the middle of the night, and be able to come up with something else. But this was just utterly magical. Like you say, it's that utter awe of his talent is divine talent, offset by this amazing circus that surrounds him. That scene in the car, on the way to the San Paolo, it just stays with you. It utterly stays with you. It's a hell of a marker to put down at the start of that documentary. It's just 100 miles per hour, and that's how it goes. It's everything that's in there. It's the joy, the self destruction, the rich talent that he has, the complex nature of his mind, the situations he gets himself into. and the utter fear as well. Not you know, the you live through him and his experiences as this moves along. You know, there's that scene in the airport, coming through the airport, and he just looks utterly petrified at what's going on, as kind of like, you know, the space that he's in, you know, fills up. You know, there's moments in this documentary where you see Maradona the man and you see the boy in him, and it's that great offset of Diego versus Maradona. It's just got absolutely everything to it. This is kind of like, for me, probably the benchmark of any sporting documentary I watch. And I've seen Senna. Senna's wonderful. I grew up on watching a bit of F1 on Sunday afternoons as a kid. And that Senna, Prost, you know, Piquet, Mansell, all of those. You know, I grew up on those. And to watch all that all over again. And you know, from the inside. And that countdown to Senna's, you know, own demise is quite stark. And the way that Asif does these documentaries is just, you are along for the ride. And, you know, you have no say in that almost. And it is, it's just a magnificent documentary, a magnificent, you know, document, you know, a historical document in whatever, you know, media that was to come in. Whether that was, you know, just audio, or, you know, audio, whether it was a book or whatever it was going to be, this is a magnificent document to a period in time that was at times utterly insane.
Yeah, I think you touched on some of that. I think the movie does amazingly well. I think it does such a fantastic job of capturing the mania and the melancholy that comes with being that level of famous that Maradona was in the 80s. And it's something, I think Capadia does it really well in the Amy documentary as well, about how being in the public eye so constantly, it's so demanding and comes with that potential to crush you. And especially when, in the case of Amy Winehouse and Maradona, your flaws are so on display for the world to see. And we really see how claustrophobic Maradona's life is, or was. It's something I noticed watching the documentary, but he's just constantly surrounded by people on all sides, constantly. It's crushing. He looks like he can barely breathe. And the only times that he's not surrounded by people is when he's on the football pitch, when he's able to, you know, do what he does and to move around and to play with that like amazing talent that he had. And it makes for a fascinating contrast and really highlights how at that height of stardom for Maradona, he clearly needed some kind of help and support that he unfortunately never received. But it makes for like a really fascinating contrast.
It does. It's so layered, you know, and because he's such a complex personality, you know, and yeah, I'll always talk about him in the present tense, you know, because, you know, for us, he'll never leave. He'll always be there. You know, you do get to see all of those facets, and it's just utterly, utterly, you know, absorbing. You know, it just swallows you up, this particular documentary.
What about for you, Pete? What was watching? I haven't watched this. I'm sure you've watched it a few times, but like, what are the elements of the movie that really stand out for you? That is, you know, that sets it apart from other docs?
I think you've got several elements. I think first of all, you have to have a subject matter. The subject matter is remarkable. You know, you've got this incredibly complex character who provokes incredible feelings that transcend rationality. You know, it becomes a purely emotional, psychological, you know, you said mania earlier, and it really is. But I think what you've also got are so many stories. And these are stories that really start from, you know, I can't remember the age of, I think he's about 10. So, you know, somewhere around that, where he first appears on Argent television as a kid. There is a kind of like almost like a predestiny of how he appears, how he's shown. But then all of these stories, the way he kind of becomes so interwoven with first Argentinian culture, but then obviously Neapolitan culture as well. And then obviously all the different other clubs he, you know, and the different kind of cultural, historical, political meanings that he encompasses. So I think the topic matter, first of all, is absolutely fascinating. There are other films that have, you know, similar topic matters. You know, I think The Two Escobars, for example, again, is a remarkable story in lots of ways. So you can kind of compare sporting films with the topic matter and what they're telling. Then I think you've got to look at how they're telling that story. And I think what Capadia does so well, and it's probably the whole research team that's involved as well, and the way they stitch it together, but the artistry and the sheer kind of meticulousness of the research that finds pictures, that finds the footage, that decides what to put in, that puts it together in a beautiful order, that selects how scenes should move from one to the other. You know, that kind of the labor involved in that is absolutely remarkable. And again, I think that takes it apart from other documentaries that go down the simple route of you know, interviewing a few people, showing a few fairly well-known clips, having a way to tell you how to feel, for example. You know, there are interviews in this documentary, and again, but they're chosen very well. They feel complementary to the image and the complementary to the sound as much as just telling the story. You know, they're part of the investigation. They're asking you to reflect and think about how you would reflect on what Maradona's doing. So I think you've got that as well. And I think then you've got the artistry, which is part of the filmmaking process. But I think Steve said something really interesting about the claustrophobia and the crowdedness. And I think the way that comes across is the way that sound is combined with image. One of the greatest things I think of this film is when, you know, Steve said he's alone on the pitch, you know, apart from the odd bloke trying to kick his knee or ankle or whatever it is. But there's this kind of silence there, and the sounds of the ball being kicked, the ball hitting the back of the net, you know, the pass being made, the contact if someone tackles him. You know, those are so clear amongst the silence. And then you contrast that with the mania, the fear, the claustrophobia, the absolute, the craziness that surrounds him at all times. There's such an important contrast. And I think that use of silence comes in again whenever Maradona gets into trouble. If you go and pinpoint when silence happens, you know, they show, you know, the leading figures of the Camorra, the son, you know, out of marriage, the other instance of drug taking, suddenly those silences just counterpoint. And those are just so beautifully timed and beautifully selected, and it's such a kind of common theme. So I think if you look at the subject matter, the meticulous process of the research, you know, the way the story is told through the artistry, all of those things make it incredibly compelling in so many ways.
Yeah, I think that's a good segue to mention sort of the MVP of this is the editor of the movie, Chris King. I read a fascinating interview that Capadia did with Goal, where he talks about how difficult it was to get the match footage specifically right. And we've mentioned in previous episodes of this, talking about other movies, how difficult it is to get the football looking realistic and authentic, especially for fictional stories. And you wouldn't think that it would be an issue for a documentary, but according to Capadia, they only had footage from the top of the stands, from where, you know, where you see like televised games from. And also they had slow motion footage that the Italian television stations use for replays, but that was taken from the side of the pitch. So a lot of the stuff we see from behind the goal or from the side, all of that was in slow motion. So they had to take this slow mo footage, speed it back up to normal speed, cut that into other footage that they had for the rest of the movie. So they had multiple angles. It's absolutely fascinating and must have been an incredibly painstaking process to get from what they had, this raw footage, into this wonderful documentary we had. And for yourself, Stephen, like, talk a little bit about how incredible this footage is that Capadia and his team managed to obtain and process into the finished product.
It is amazing, you know, what they do with that. You know, again, you feel like you're along for the ride. You know, just picking up a little bit on what Pete said about the chaos surrounding Maradona as well. You know, the football pitch, that rectangular green patch of land is the only place that he can't be followed. You know, yes, by his marker, but, you know, not by the multitudes, not by the circus. You know, if he's being followed on a pitch, it's by people, his own people. It's almost a blessing to be hacked down, you know, in some respects. And they kind of get, you know, with the footage, they get that right because they get that close-up image of it and that kind of brutality. You know, I have to look at the Fennec elbow. You know, and all that, which, you know, if anyone's doing a, you know, an England podcast, you know, of the future, you can have that one as your title. The Fennec elbow would be a great name for an England podcast. Yeah, they do. They just absolutely nail it. You know, it's that, just that raw nature to it. You know, and I've used that word already several times in this podcast, and I'll use it again before it's over, I'm sure, because there is just that utter rawness, and the way that they've edited that and pieced it together, you know, it's not duty, it's labour of love territory, and it's people who have, they know what they're putting together, or they have spoken to people, you know, they've done their research, they have done their due diligence on how, you know, how that pitch feels, how that moment on that pitch feels, because they have epically pulled it off, you know, as you say, something that was very difficult for the footage that they had, piece it together in the manner they did. It's very real. It's very, very real.
I think the expertise is so important as well. You know, when people are speaking, you know, these are the experts on Maradona. I mean, the only people possibly lacking are, you know, some of the Argentinian historians or Argentinian socialists who've written about him, you know, and written a great deal about how he matters so much for Argentina. If we're really critical, and again, this is really critical, you know, I think that some of the mania in Argentina isn't there. And again, the story is largely focused on Naples. That's no problem. You know, I don't think you could tell, you know, you can't tell a full Maradona story in you know, a long documentary as it is. But if you have people like Daniel Arcucci, you know, his personal trainer, you know, his wife, he himself, you know, these are people that, you know, knew him, that know Naples, that know the story, that were there, that have talked to him, they've written about him. Even if Capadia himself, and again, I know, Steve, when you, you know, there's a podcast that we should probably point listeners back to about when you and Stu Horsfield interviewed Capadia when the documentary came out. You know, I know he didn't have as much access as he wanted. Probably didn't have as much access as the other famous kind of Maradona documentary by Emir Kusturica. But, you know, the people that are chosen to fill in those gaps and the way that they're, you know, how, again, their interviews are probably broken down into these really key insights and key moments and key, I suppose, well, I was going to say keys, to actually unlock for the viewer to decide, so what, who was Maradona? Where does Diego appear? Where does Maradona appear? Where does, you know, his persona take over? And I think one of the other things that I think is so good about this is that it doesn't impose the meanings for you. I think one of the things that is so important about Maradona as an icon, as a myth, as a star of global football, of Argentina, of Naples, and of all the people that find a way of identifying with him, is that there are so many meanings that are imposed upon him. That's something about the Kusturica documentary. There's a very different film to the Capadia one. And it's one of the main contrast points. But Capadia doesn't really say, this is what he definitely means. He's saying, these are all the things he could mean. And it's kind of for you to then decide, so why does he mean this? Or, and, you know, and establish that with the images you see, the key moments that are picked out, the words of the experts that knew him best. So I think that kind of more dispassionate, you know, it's passionate because it tells the story in a very passionate, in a very meticulous, detailed way to try and get to the depth. But it's dispassionate because it's not overwhelmed by the sheer iconicity that kind of one, just one side is stuck to rigorously, religiously or devotedly. And that's the traps that Emir Kusturica certainly falls into, for example. So I think that's one of the things, that there's some of the things that make this documentary, you know, really important, you know, in terms of what it means and how much knowledge and how much meaning is kind of transmitted through the screen.
I think you make a lot of really good points. I think that's also how you know when a movie's in the hands of someone who knows what he's doing, when they know how and when to portray things in a manner that doesn't sway the audience's opinion. It is, they're showing you what happened. They're giving you opinions. They're giving you insights from experts and from people who were there at the time. But you're still left to interpret meanings, interpret intentions, however you wanna do that. And I think that is. Yeah, like you say, one of the great things about this documentary. Sticking with Maradona, the person, for a moment, I found this, doing my research, I found this pretty fascinating article in the Harvard Gazette, of all places, talking about how important Maradona was as an individual. This was published after his death. I'm just going to read this little bit. Maradona's death also has an important social and political meaning because when he was at his best in the World Cup of 1986 and Argentina was at the beginning of its democratic transition with Raul Alfonsín, as president, he was able to create, for brief moments, a sense of community, a community of people in awe of what Maradona was doing. And I think, for this one's for you, Pete, I think this is one of those aspects that makes Maradona so captivating as an individual. He was always more than just a footballer, and especially so in Argentina.
Yeah, he is bigger than football. And he's that because of narratives that he creates himself, through his, what we could call his bodily or physical performances, but also the words that he gives. You know, there are so many times where, you know, often we kind of think about the goals, you know, and I think that the documentary by Capadia shows the goals, all of them, all the moves or the actions, you know, even the violence, you know, the infamous game against Athletic Bilbao, which pretty much spells the end of his Barcelona time. You know, we see on the pitch, possibly what the documentary misses a little bit is actually some of the most famous statements he made. You know, we see, for example, him swearing at the Italian crowd when they're booing the national anthem in the semi-final in the San Paolo. You know, we hear a couple of things he says about the Falklands crisis. But some of the words he said, like, you know, football football, the football itself can't be dirtied. El fútbol no se mancha. And there are so many other just little witticisms and so many important statements that he made. So he creates meaning himself. And the meaning, you know, because he's asked often about political issues or about cultural issues. And I think certainly after his retirement from football playing, you know, he needs to find some other way to be relevant, to find meaning. So when he is talking about anti-Bush statements or pro-Castro or pro-Che Guevara or pro-Chavez statements, you know, these are things that, you know, obviously transcend the football domain and use his currency that he has to all these different things. But then I think there's also a huge amount of meaning that's created by the media or by films. You know, we can probably talk a bit later about all the other films that deal with Maradona, because there are a lot. But, you know, the media and politicians are so important in creating certain myths or meanings or histories. But then you have history itself. You know, there are things that predate his birth, which then he almost fulfills as a kind of football and cultural destiny. There's basically there is this the myth of the Pibe. You know, I think you mentioned it earlier about the young boy who is identified as being this figure of what Argentinian football should be. And this is constructed in the 1920s, really, by magazines like El Gráfico and a couple of others to a slightly lesser extent. But what you have is this idea of the dirty street kid who's, you know, quite small, but lived off his wits. He's quite crafty. He's a bit of a geezer, if you know, we want to put it in kind of, you know, far show kind of terms, a bit were, a bit way. And he, you know, he learns his football through sheer instinct, through the streets, through playing on the waste ground, on the potrero. And this kind of idea of what this boy is seen as being a way of integrating people that would recognize that site. Argentina is a country of migrants. You have a lot of Italian migrants, Spanish migrants, Jewish migrants, migrants in the Middle East. You know, there's obviously some Brits there as well. But this idea of the kid who plays in the street is a kind of unifying idea of something we all recognize and has an aspiration that we all can recognize as well in a very masculine way of the kid that dreams of being great. And so, you know, this is a kind of, there's even an image of it. You know, there's a famous magazine from something like 1921 called Beyiken of this little kid, and he's got like a kind of bandage, and he's got kind of muddy shorts and a cut on his knee, and, you know, he's holding this kind of leather football that looks like it's half ripped. You know, the jersey's too big. You know, he's a scamp, he's a rascal. And then when I actually teach about Maradona, I compare that image from 1921 with a photo of him sitting on a ball on a muddy field, you know, with loads of puddles, and say, there's no difference. So that's the thing, you know, he kind of becomes identified with this myth of what Argentinian football was at its most crucial founding moment. And when he kind of personifies all these things by appearing as a 10-year-old or 11-year-old on this potrero, juggling a ball with a kind of scrappy shirt with number 10 in the back, you know, suddenly it's like, that's what we all thought the Pibe was. That's what we all thought Argentinian football national identity is. So because football is so close to Argentinian identity, because it's like, this is one of the things we can be the best at. We can't be the best at wars, having great political leaders. You know, we might be good at selling meat and so on, but we're not a superpower. But if we can be the best at this, then that's what makes Argentina great on a world stage. So that's what kind of Maradona taps into, you know, the history, the myth, the identity, the crucial nature of Argentina's place in the world, the recent conflicts that Argentina's, you know, emerging from, the need for glory, the masculinity, the way the game is played, the way he identifies, the fact that he's got, you know, slightly, you know, roots that are linked to migration as well. And then what he says himself creates meanings. And then what the way people write about him and talk about him and show him. All of these things just create this absolute kind of morass of difficulty in trying to find where some sense of truth is. And again, truth's a very, you know, it's a very difficult thing to find with Maradona because there are so many legends that are part of that. But that's what makes him so fascinating in so many ways.
I mean, I didn't know this bit about, you know, this element of destiny around him and the images from the 1920s and stuff like that. That is, I mean, I already found Maradona is probably the most captivating individual that has ever played football. There will probably never be someone who ever is as interesting as him, basically. So to add even more elements to that, I think is, I love that.
Right. You know, there is a conference about Maradona studies in Argentina in November, just to give you an idea of how much that, you know, how important he is for that, you know. a conference of academics. There's been academic books written about him. There's about 15 or 20 articles about him, you know, that I've read, I ask students to read. You know, Maradonology is actually its own kind of subsection of Argentina, of kind of Latin American sporting sociology, if you like.
I mean, I wanted to touch on one of the important elements of his mythos anyway, the Hand of God incident. How can we not talk about it? Any excuse to talk about one of the great moments of football in history? A little with the head of Maradona, a little with the Hand of God. And this is unrelated to the documentary, really, but Stephen, isn't it amazing watching this incident now, knowing that if that happened today, it would be counted by VAR, and the most talked about incident in football history would never have existed? And it's such a huge part of his mythos, so integral to his story now. It's kind of amazing to watch that play out in the movie in the documentary, I think, and to know the sort of the context that comes later with that now. But it's so important to who Maradona is, right?
Oh, it's just such a, you know, a fantastic tattoo for him to wear. You know, it's almost like, you know, I mean for me it's just as wondrous as his second goal in that game. You know, that second goal gets such a, quite rightly, such a big, huge up. But, you know, that first goal as well, people centre on the ball hitting Maradona's hand, you know, which is what it does. But it's everything that surrounds it. If you wind that goal back about 12 seconds, it's got, you know, 12, 15 seconds, it's got everything going for it. You've got Peter Shilton, who can see that his own defenders are, you know, sleepwalking somewhat, and he's winding his hand almost like he's spinning a loop to kind of like, come on, we're falling asleep here. There's a long ball forward into no man's land by Terry Butcher, absolutely unforced. There's no one near, you know, there's no one 20 yards, within 20 yards of Terry Butcher when he plays this ball. And it's the way that it's just kind of sauntered back into the England half, and then suddenly there's this burst of acceleration. And it's all done in about 6 seconds. It just goes from 0 to 60 in the blink of an eye, and it's the way that he just carries his run on when he lays the ball off. It's the spooning of the ball up with Valdano and his spin with his elbow jutting, and, you know, Steve Hodge laying the ball up. It's the way that Fenech is pulled across, you know, to try and counter this, and no one's watching Maradona as he runs through. And all of this move is a work of genius, you know, because he's just about to pickpocket. And then even if he'd put that ball in the back of the net in a more legitimate manner, you know, it's still the most perfect goal. But then to do what he did, you know, and he places the palm, you know, his fist on the top of his head, and he doesn't punch the ball as such. He just gives his own height a couple of extra inches, and it literally just bounces off his hand. There's no perfect image. There's no photograph that captures this moment perfectly as the ball hits his hand. It's either kind of like his hand is on the way down as the ball comes down, or his hand is on the way up after the ball's hit it. You know, you have to look at the footage to see it and stop it in stop motion, basically. Wallace and Gromit, you know, there's such an Aardman, you know, about this in doing this. And I wrote an article about it, and it would have been coming up 10 years ago. I think I wrote it for what would have been the 30th anniversary of the goal. And I wrote this article for TFT in glowing terms of it. You know, it's the whole Zapruder effect to it as well, because it's seen as an intangible crime, and you're looking for the conspiracy within it. You know, surely it's not Oswald on his own that's managed to do this to England in the quarterfinals of the 1986 World Cup. Surely there's, you know, the CIA or the mafia's involved, and there's also a triangulation of crossfire. You know, there's all of that at play, and I just think it's one of the most majestic goals ever. You know, I absolutely adore it. You know, and people will either, you know, they'll be aghast at that, but, you know, I'm sure some will be. But I just think it's got so much going for it, and it's got so much more than simply, you know, the hand of Maradona. There's so much surrounding that. And then you've got to throw on, you know, the political context to it, you know, the tinderbox atmosphere in that stadium that day as well, and all of that. You know, the Falklands War, which is just 4 years prior. You know, the fact that Argentina took to the pitch with bunches of flowers. You know, it was almost like the bunches of flowers with the revolver and the silencer hidden in. You know, they kill with kindness and then kill with the ball at the feet and ultimately the ball at Maradona's hand as well. You know, if someone was to write a film, you know, within the whole theme of that and the context of it, but put a different kind of subject matter to it, it'd be, you know, utterly. You know, absorbing. You know, you'd be amazed by it, I'm sure. But yeah, it's just such an icon of football, and you know, I think more and more. I mean, people should look at that, you know, in such broader terms than simply the punt. Without, you know, without wanting to, you know, for the want of a better term, pun not intended, but the punchline.
I am inclined to agree with everything you say, Steve. I think we should, you know, it's an amazing moment of football in history that we are all the better for it existing, I think. That incident, Maradona, I think, is the one footballer in history who has had the most impact on pop culture more than any other. And I think that incident itself is probably the one that is the most influential.
It's the whole, I mean, Pete will appreciate the Dick Dastardly turn of phrase here, we go Hanna-Barbera. It's the whole villainy in it that's just brilliant. It's cartoon villainy is just magnificent in it as part of this as well. And you know, I've you know, wrote that book on the 86 World Cup, and I've spoken to people who were in the stadium that day, and it was so well executed that you had people getting back to kind of like the coaches and the buses totally unaware that was how the goal had unfolded. They just thought it was totally legit, and it was later in the evening, you know, as they sat in bars, kind of like watching the footage on the telly again, that they'd seen this. So, you know, it was never the obvious thing that, you know, people tend to think it was at the time as well. It fooled Barry Davis, for instance, for the best part of 30 seconds. If you find the BBC coverage of that game, you know, he says that, you know, the claiming offside and stuff like that. And, you know, it really was kind of like that. A, did he do it? B, yes, he's done it. But still, there needed to be that little bit of a cushion between the concept of him doing it and people accepting that he'd done it. And it was just, yeah, there's a great, I think, just how Argentina outclassed England that day as well is one that goes forgotten. You know, there's a great article in the Times, you know, the match report the following day, or one of those navel gazing pieces. I think it was David Miller, possibly, who did it. You know, and he references how, you know, the England defence trying to marshal and deal with Diego Maradona was like a load of farmhands trying to deal with a bull that slipped the pen. You know, and it's just all of this terminology because, you know, he plays the role of the raging bull with a football at his feet. You will never get another Maradona. You will never get another instance like that, you know, because footballers that scale such heights no longer come from such lows. They're identified at a massively young age and they're within rarefied environments from young. So they don't really have that kind of rags to riches journey to make anymore. This fact that something like this can never happen again, there's just no way this ever happens again.
There's an interesting movie called The Hand of God, which is a semi-autobiographical movie about director Paolo Sorrentino. It's about his childhood growing up in Naples when Maradona was playing for Napoli. It's more of a coming-of-age story rather than a football story, but the Hand of God incident plays a pretty crucial role in that movie. It just goes to show that the impact that like that incident has, that it's, you know, it's still being featured in movies. This movie was made like 3 years ago, so you know the impact of this incident, that it's still being captured and played out and shown how the influence of that impacted people even now. In the bit in the movie, it has played quite a strange role, really, because I mean it's been a while since I've seen the movie, but there's bits of how you see all of Naples watching it on their balconies, and the ball goes in, and the uncle is like, Maradona's the best player ever, and it reveals, oh, it looked like he's punched it, and he's like, well, this is incredible. It's a political act. He's defeating the English. This is revenge for the Falklands War. He did this on purpose, and it's just the impact of that. I think is, yeah, It's amazing. And I wouldn't necessarily recommend that as a footballing movie to go watch, because there's not that much football. It's more about how Maradona's presence was ever present in Sorrentino's life as a teenager. But the idea of the hand of God as a political act, Pete, I'm sure that must resonate a bit in Argentina.
Yeah, hugely. I mean, it links back to the Pibe thing. You know, I was saying a bit earlier how the Pibe is supposed to be the geezer that gets by in his wits, that has to cheat a little bit, that, you know, needs to be streetwise. You know, this is the perfect example of it, of what's called viveza, you know, this sneakiness, this getting away with it, this craftiness. And sometimes it's, you know, putting a ball through someone's leg. Sometimes it's a little push, sometimes a little shirt pull, you know, but sometimes it's the handball. You know, it's perfect. It's the perfect gesture against, you know, if we look at political terms, the colonizing power, the neo-colonizing power. You know, Britain pretty much had an informal empire since Argentina became independent for much of the 19th century. You know, Argentina's mineral resources, its kind of meat, its kind of wheat, all these kind of things became, you know, dominated in lots of ways through the British. You know, they built the railways, they controlled the electric plants, they were responsible for so many things, and they extracted it, they took away. What did they really give back? So, you know, Maradona, and I think one of the many things that he said about that particular goal, you know, in which this kind of the telling of the story gets better and better, talks about it's big, like nicking a wallet. You know, it's almost like, you know, little boys there playing football, the rich English, British industrialist comes over, hello, young boy, and someone bends over to say, well done, and someone's nicked his wallet. It's that kind of idea. I think, you know, if we look at the political significance of it, you know, the Falklands Islands is very much there. And again, you know, I think one of the best football books written, you know, if we think about this as being one of the best films about sport made, then one of the best books written about football is also about Maradona. It's also about this game. It's called El Partido. It's the match. Shock horror, it's a book that's not in English, because good books about football can be written in other languages as well. Wake up, everybody. It doesn't have to be English. It's an incredible book by a guy called Andres Burgo that just goes into, again, the same amount of meticulous detail about what happened in the game, the shirts, the songs, the dressing room, the bus rides, you know, what they ate, how they trained, what they did, who said what, why it mattered, what the English were doing, what they said, what the newspaper said, what everyone saw. You know, it is the, you know, if you, it's such a shame that it hasn't been translated. Whoever the publisher of Andres Burgos is, and Andres Burgos himself, I'll do it. I will translate that book for you, mate. Cut me in. I will do it, because this book needs to be read by an English speaking audience and everywhere else. That book does it incredibly well about talking just how much it meant, because, you know, if we think about the Falklands, a lot of the guys in that team could have been called up. You know, it was either some of them were the same year as the young cadets who were forced into military service and went to the Falklands. Some of them knew people. You know, there are something like, I think it's something like 11 or 12 professional, semi-professional footballers who are about 18, 19, go to the Falklands. So, and people knew them. Some of the lads could have been, I can't remember which ones it was. There is another podcast that did, not with TFT, that talks about that. So I won't advertise it here. But, you know, that's the thing that makes it a big deal. But then I think if you look at the way that other documentaries deal with this, so the Emir Kusturica documentary, which again is a great companion piece to this in lots of ways, he does make a big deal of the goal. But the way he does it, again, he talks to Maradona about it himself, but then he keeps making these kind of animated little scenes of, you know, a very punk Maradona with God Save the Queen, you know, in the background by the Sex Pistols, just beating kind of, not the English footballers, but the Queen, Prince Charles. But then Tony Blair, who wasn't the Prime Minister at the time, George Bush, who wasn't the President at the time. You know, but what then Kusturica does say, that wasn't just a goal at that time for against the British. This is also a goal that resonates down the ears to be against capitalism, against American kind of exploitation and imperialism, against the British monarchy. You know, so, I mean, Kusturica, you know, kind of imposes those meanings, which are quite artificial. It's quite flawed. But what it does do really well says, you know, this is the power that football has. Football is entirely political. It is. And it's not necessarily what happens at the time. It's what people say it means. And that kind of way of showing that goal and showing this kind of animated, punk-tastic, you know, anti-imperialistic stance is a really, you know, it's a really interesting way of showing you know, how meaning kind of develops and gets imposed by different people over different times. So it's relevant at that time, then it shifts as time goes on as well.
I was already a fan of the goal, but now knowing that the hand of God is anti-imperialistic and anti-capitalist, I'm even more of a fan, frankly.
What I'd throw into that as well is that, you know, it's a goal that has gone on to become whatever anyone wants it to be. You know, they can interpret it in any way they want to do. And Maradona himself went on to do that. You know, from a piece of opportunistic daylight robbery, whatever you want to call it. You know, it's grown and grown and grown, and it consumed Maradona himself in that respect. That, you know, he interpreted and reinterpreted it, you know, many times over, you know, across the rest of his life. It's a bit like the KLF being asked, what does the KLF, you know, initialize, what does it stand for? And every interview, they give a different version of it. You know, it's kind of that kind of aspect to it. And, you know, the author of that goal himself changed the meaning of it, the context of it many times over himself. And within that, you know, that's a fantastic thing in itself.
Absolutely. Thinking about an element of the documentary, thinking about the decision to focus on Maradona's time in Naples, which I think is really interesting. Kapadia himself explained in an interview with The Independent, saying that Naples became the centerpiece because it felt like there was a before and after. Maradona arrived as a person, as a vulnerable, innocent kid, and he leaves as someone very different. Kapadia goes on to say that everything that happens after Maradona's time in Naples is a repetition of the cycle that begins while Maradona's there in that city. How do you both feel about, you know, the portrayal of Naples, the portrayal of Maradona and Naples, and that dysfunctional relationship between the man and the city?
I think you know, it's a very good place to start. I would slightly disagree with it's the start of that cycle. I think, you know, there's a cycle that's already happened at Boca Juniors and at Barcelona as well, of starting well but then busting, then self-combusting. You know, I think that's the cycle. I also am not sure whether, you know, he comes as a child and leaves, you know, as understanding. I almost think he's always a child. Certainly, you know, that's again the Pibe thing, the boy, the eternal boy who doesn't understand, who doesn't know what consequences are, who is a spirit of the moment, and doesn't get, you know, I think he says in the documentary, you know, I didn't hurt anyone with what I did. You know, I think your wife would probably disagree with that. I think, you know, your fans might well disagree with the fact that, I think that, you know, the fact that you helped the Camorra, people might disagree with that as, you know, not having any hurt. But I think that what this film is great about, and the fact that it picks, you know, the Naples years, the Napoli years as being central, is that they are so intertwined with emotion. And I think that's where a lot of the story, you know, the story matters. You know, that's where the emotion of the viewer, the emotion that comes from the fans, that from the players, from what happens on and off the pitch is so dramatic. You know, you have all the ingredients you want. You have the Camorra, the mafia. You have sex, drugs, rock and roll. You know, you have incredible football. You have ups and downs. You have, you know, incredible triumphs, obstacles, you know, destruction. You have the perfect hero journey. But also what I think you also have, which is very rare, is that you also have the perfect anti-hero journey as well, you know, because he is both. You know, he is the hero journey and the anti-hero journey. And even though this is a segment, you know, and I think it is repeated at Barcelona, at Boca Juniors, you know, his time as a manager, you know, as a kind of personality, you know, those journeys are there in a very, in a much more global context. You know, arguably Barcelona didn't have quite the global idea, but the mega event of the World Cup certainly does. The story that Napoli beating Juventus, AC Milan, all those other great teams of Serie A at that particular time, in what was seen as the best league in the world at the time as well, is the mega event. You know, it's the greatest stage. And I think what it also does that's very important is it gets to the heart of the city. You know, it doesn't talk to the people per se, but they're there. You know, they're thoroughly there. You know, they're there from the moment the cars are driving through, you know, the kind of city in the very start of the film. They're there when he walks up that ramp into the Sao Paulo and he's surrounded by photographers and people. At every moment, there are people that are trying to be in that film. They're screaming, they're shouting, they're trying to be seen, they're asking for his autograph. They just can't say anything but Diego, Diego, or Maradona, Maradona. So I think that it captures this, one of the most crucial times where almost every citizen of a city, you know, man, woman, child, because there are lots of women there as well, has such a personal investment with one person. And the way that that impacts on that person, the way that the city, you know, destroys, you know, or helps to destroy, because I think Maradona is complicit in this. And I think that, you know, whenever, you know, at the moment, there's been a trial for the doctors that were trying to look after Maradona at the death. Maradona should be on trial himself. You know, there are reasons why he did it and he destroyed himself, but he is part of his own murder. But you can understand it through this film. I think that's what makes it so important, is just how much there is a convergence of everything that makes a story, everything that unites a player and a people and a place, and just all those elements that are bound up within it, you know, kind of help to just kind of, you know, resonate so kind of socially and so historically.
You make a lot of good points, and I think this is a something that Capaldi is really good at. I think he does it with Amy and does it with Senna as well, where we go into these documentaries, they are very public people, and we know the story already. We're not necessarily going to learn anything new, but Capaldi is an expert at sort of telling you the story you're going to watch in the opening sequence or the opening segments. So with Senna, the movie opens with his mother talking over footage of Senna boxcar racing or whatever it is, and talking about how the family are scared that he's going to hurt himself. And then in this one, in Maradona, one of the earliest scenes is a reporter asking Maradona what he hopes to find in Naples, and his response is peace and respect. And then the music stops, and like you said earlier, Pete, like the silence starts, and the president goes ballistic. Everyone's shouting, and Maradona's there looking. He's a superstar already, but he just looks so daunted by what he's seen. He looks like already concerned, and it just. Yeah, I think it's such a fascinating decision to focus just on this time in Naples. I would have been interested to see some of the stuff about, you know, USA 94 with the nurse coming onto the pitch. That would have been interesting, but maybe would have made the movie a little bit too depressing. Because as it is, there's that streak of melancholy that runs through the movie. But the thing about melancholy is always like, it's the other side of the coin is like the hopefulness that comes with it. So while you're seeing someone, you know, very much destroy their own life and make these decisions that send their own life into a spiral, you can't help but have that tugging sensation of like, he was special though, wasn't he? He was something else. And maybe including all that later stuff after Naples would have overwhelmed it too much and made it too depressing. And also just focus on Naples makes the documentary a little atypical. It's not a straightforward story. It's not like a typical biopic or typical story being told. It's focused on the part of his life where he burned brightest and also where things started to turn so dramatically. What about you, Steve? Is there any other areas of Maradona's life that you would have liked to have seen covered in the documentary, or is it absolutely perfect as is?
Yeah, I think it's what's great about it is that it does leave you wanting more. You can always look back at it retrospectively and say, well, look, this could easily. Yeah, I think if it was done now, it'd be a Netflix or a Disney Plus 5 or 6 part documentary. You know, where you do get the entire spectrum of his career. But, you know, I've always been fascinated by Menotti omitting him from the 78 World Cup, for instance. You know, I'd love to know more about that. I'd love to see more about that. You know, that switch, that step up from Argentinos Juniors to Boca, you know, and the frivol that surrounds Boca. You know, so there's so much, but obviously, you know, a lot of that is dependent on the footage that's available and all of that. So, yeah, you know, there's so many chapters in Maradona's life that, you know, can never be anything other than fascinating, but I totally get why it centres so much on Naples. You know, like I say, you know, I think if someone was picking this baton up now and doing it today, then, you know, it would be a 5 or 6 part documentary. It'd be like the Beatles ones on Disney Plus, you know, and all that type of stuff. It would go massively in depth on it. What I would go back to say is that they got the balance of it absolutely spot on. You know, you used the word hope before, and, you know, that was there in my mind about 10 minutes earlier, you know, in terms of, you know, his own hopes and aspirations, but, you know, the hope that he gives to the public in Naples as well. You know, that's you know, largely a disparate and desperate population, you know, and he comes along and hears this, as Pete said, hero and anti-hero, you know, and what is wrapped up within this documentary is the hope that he gives, you know, the dependency, which is just, it permeates it throughout, you know, from multiple directions, his own dependencies, you know, the multiple dependencies upon him, be that from the Camorra, be that from, you know, his club president who won't let him go when he said he would do in 89, you know, the supporters, you know, the fact that, you know, they weren't willing to let him go until it was under their terms and conditions, you know, after, you know, what Pete had said of the 1990 World Cup that had been such a, you know, a turning point. So, yeah, you know, from hope to dependency to despair, you know, and they get it absolutely perfect. So, you know, those missing chapters, you know, don't detract from the end product.
I think the 78 one is really interesting because this creates a kind of problem in terms of what Maradona represents. Because Maradona, in certainly later life, and again, this is what Kusturica focuses on, is the political figure since his end of the career. You know, that's what the topic of Kusturica is. He does revisit a lot of the other moments of the career, but it is a post-football biography. But if you have a figure like Maradona who is against Bush, against Blair, against capitalism, against neo-imperialism, it's quite problematic, you know, when Maradona could have been featuring for a team that was representing their regime in lots of ways, in terms of the regime's rhetoric anyway, and the way that the press at the time were narrating it. Obviously, Menotti has a different rhetoric. He is saying, we are doing it for the people, as a leftist himself. You know, so Maradona could have been involved with, you know, the, winning a tournament for the dictatorship, and therefore a kind of, you know, anathema to what he then stood for, what was seen to have stood for. You know, but then Maradona does win the under-19s or the Youth World Cup in the following year and does greet the dictatorship. And that is a dictatorship triumph. And he is, you know, he is too young. He's not really aware of things. He hasn't got that, you know, maybe a sense of political savvy that he might have gained since, or at least a knowledge of how to be popular in both senses of the words for the people and, you know, popular as in a, you know, cultural icon kind of thing. Then I think, you know, you also have these problems with, you know, he supported Menem, who again is, you know, one of the great, the architects of the Argentine economic disaster that still resonates to this day. You know, there are lots of figures with Maradona with them. So, you know, so those kind of problematic things, I think sometimes certainly Argentinian documentary makers don't want to say that because that is almost going against the myth. I think what makes Kusturica's documentary interesting, you know, is the post-life story, you know, the crises that, you know, when he doesn't have the escape to the pitch, he seems to be always trying to find some kind of place for peace. You know, he said, it was a great that you picked it out, Matt, as at the start of the film, you know, I'm looking for peace, I'm looking for respect. He's always looking for that. You know, he, again, in the Kusturica documentary, he finds it briefly in a couple of places. Kusturica takes him back to Belgrade to almost revisit a goal that he scored against Yugoslavia or against Red Star Belgrade, I can't remember which one it is. And they're on the pitch, you know, at the stadium, and he's showing how he scored it. And he's just having a kickabout with Kusturica, who looks like the tiniest little, you know, puppy in the world. He's like, look at me, I know Maradona. It's so, the fawning nature, it's hilarious. But then they're driving around Belgrade, and he's just like waving at people out the window, and no one really seems to notice, but he's having a laugh. It's almost like he finds his peace in these little moments. But what you see in that documentary as well is, you know, the health damage, the weight gains, the self-destruction, the instance with the police being carried off in hospitals. You see Fat Diego, which, and the very brief moment that you see that in the film, is probably one of the most shocking, also maybe one of the shockingest bits in sports documentary. That can't be him. How's that happened? How's he happened? So I think, you know, if you look around, you'll find these other parts of him. You know, there are so many documentaries made of him, you know, at different points and trying to tell different stories. And I think it's also worth remembering that, you know, we have so much content. You know, we have so much content at the time through these documentaries, through clips and so on. Imagine what it's like to be Argentina, where, you know, he had a chat show, La Noche de Liez. You know, he had a chat show where he's there. Again, Kusturica shows a bit of that. He's always on the news. You know, he is in the newspaper all the time. He's getting interviewed all the time. Everywhere he goes in the streets, people will see him. So that documentary is almost so prevalent in certain places. And everyone, I think, feels like they, you know, have a part of that documentary somehow as well. They said, this is how it impacted me. Whether you're in, you know, a tiny village in the northernmost or southernmost part of Argentina, or Bangladesh, or England, or, you know, Naples, or wherever else it is. You know, that's what makes it so interesting. There are so many stories that just emerge. I mean, there's a film as well where, I can't remember what it's called, but it might be an Indian or an Iranian film. And, you know, they go off to this small village in, you know, this tiny shepherd's hut in the middle of the mountains. And the shepherd's got a picture of Maradona in Iran, in this tiny village. That's the kind of idea of, you know, somehow it's always culturally relevant. And you'll find those snippets of documentary, those snippets of content in films like this, in books, in magazines, in clips, in songs. You know, there are so many songs about him. Again, you know, one last thing about the Kusturica documentary. If you look for any bit, just look for the scene where he is singing a song about himself in a nightclub. That is amazing. It's just a great scene where he is on stage belting out this song, you know, joined by his daughters, by these kind of flunkies and acolytes. It's so interesting to see, you know, this conflict at that precise moment between Diego and Maradona, which, again, as Steve said earlier, is a really crucial part of the Kapadia documentary as well.
I think that's the title of the episode, isn't it? The title of the podcast is Maradona is Always Culturally Relevant. I mean, like you said, there's so many different segments and periods to Maradona's life, and he's so, like, endlessly fascinating that it's impossible to fit everything in. And I actually have a pretty fun little story that's related to this. When I first saw this documentary, I was living in Madrid. So my girlfriend is a film journalist, and she managed to get us tickets to go see this a Q&A with the director. And when we saw it, there were no subtitles. My Spanish at that time, and it still is, very basic. But the documentary is so well put together that, and I mean, half the documentary plays out on Maradona's face. So it's you can follow the narrative, you can follow the story. But a fun thing happened at the Q&A where someone in the crowd had a bit of a question, a sort of issue with the movie. And it turned out that he himself was a former footballer. He was Lobo Carrasco, who was a winger who played with Maradona at Barcelona. And his issue was that the movie didn't really feature, and here comes the name again, Cetus Pila, the Maradona's lifelong agent, who Carrasco basically claimed was a large reason of why things turned so sour for Maradona. It was a crazy thing to see at a Q&A, to have a former footballer in the crowd disagreeing with the director at a Q&A. But it was a fun part to be, a fun thing to be part of. I can see you nodding, Pete. You agree with the... Is there a bit of an omission, something that's missing in Cetus Pila?
Maradona says that he robbed him, you know, in the biography as well. So if you read the biography that was ghostwritten, I can't remember who ghostwritten it, Cetus Pila is the villain, is one of many villains. I think Kapadia probably said, like, there was certain, I think, did he say to you, Steve, in the interview that there were certain things that were topics that he couldn't talk about with Maradona? I think Cetus Pila is probably one of those.
Yeah, it was. You know, Asif was. It was great. It was one of the interview we did, but it was just one of those. We got the email through saying, "Would you like to go and watch this advanced show?" And then it was like, "Oh yeah, that sounds pretty good. And by the way, do you want to interview him?" Yeah, and even then, it was great because, you know, we talk about how that, you know, captivating nature of Maradona and just, you know, I mean, just the love of football, and we were given 10 minutes to sit and talk to him, and we ended up getting close on half an hour with a very, very anxious kind of PA wanting to get us out of the office. But in the end, you know, Asif was the one that was keeping the conversation going, because, you know, he was talking about how, you know, he was sat with Maradona and he was just kind of like transfixed by his left foot, for instance. And I can't remember whether this made the cut on the podcast or not, or whether this was after the recording had stopped or not. And he said he just had to grab his foot, you know, and Maradona jumped. And what are you doing? So, yeah, there were certain boundaries, you know, and within that, me and Stu walked down to that office that day and say, we've just shook hands with the hand that grabbed Maradona's left foot. We were that kind of, like, you know, in awe of it. But, yeah, it does have that kind of, that aspect to it. And it's the borderlines with Maradona that are so fascinating. You know, yeah, even this Oscar-winning director, you know, had, you know, these out-of-bounds topics. And Maradona's way of just shutting them down, you know, that is out-of-bounds, that, you know, that topic of conversation. he just had a way about him, you know, that just kind of like, you know, the body language, the look, you know, he didn't even have to say, no, we don't go there. It was just, yeah. And Asif was given, you know, he was under no illusions that if he was drifting towards a place where Maradona was not willing to talk about, then he needed two or three different avenues to go towards to keep the conversation going. Otherwise, that particular session would come to an abrupt end.
I've got another companion piece for people for our listeners to go listen to. I want to listen to this episode. But look, we could sit here and talk about this for hours more, but there's a couple of things I wanted to touch on before we finish. We've mentioned it before, but I think Maradona is almost certainly the footballer who has had the most influence on pop culture, more so than any other footballer that I can think of anyway. And there is a whole host of TV shows and movies. We've mentioned a few already. We've mentioned Maradona by Costa Rica. We've mentioned The Hand of God by Paolo Sorrentino. We also have a biographical drama, Maradona Blessed Dream, which is a TV show that streamed on Amazon Prime. There's the British movie In the Hands of the Gods, where five British freestylers head out on a journey to meet their idol, Maradona. There's the 2007 biographical movie, Maradona, The Hand of God, directed by Marco Ricci. Have either of you seen any of these other movies that feature Maradona? I'm thinking, Pete, you must have seen a few.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few. There's a Gary Lineker documentary where Lineker meets him as well. Yeah, we talked about the Costa Rica one a lot. I mean, again, I think if you get the chance to watch both, I would. It's very different because it's so narcissistic. It's one of my friends, what a great, you know, academic from Argentina called Pablo Alabarces, who, you know, knows and has written about Maradona. So it's the meeting of two great narcissists, that documentary. But it's all about the meanings that someone can put upon Maradona. And all about the ego and the wildness and the craziness of how meaning is possessed. There's also some great scenes with the Church of Maradona. You know, some of the rituals that they have, which seem to involve some large-breasted ladies as part of the religious ceremonies, are incredibly weird. The other really cool film that I've seen, it's not necessarily about Maradona because he's not in it, but it's called El Camino de San Diego, The Path Towards San Diego, St. Diego. It's kind of by a guy called Carlos Sorin. It's a road movie. But what that does is tries to explain or tries to meditate on how important, you know, a popular icon becomes. And the story is about a guy who cuts wood in Misiones, which is where Maradona's family is originally from. And he is obsessed by Maradona. He's got like a tattoo on his back. He wants to call his daughter Diego, but he finds this bit of wood that he is convinced looks just like Diego celebrating a goal. And this happens just after one of Maradona's illnesses. And then he decides the only thing he can do, because all these people are kind of doing these pilgrimages to the hospital to try and give himself and trying to help him get better. So he goes in this pilgrimage as well from, you know, the very north of Argentina all the way down and meets various people. And it's about this kind of religiosity of what Maradona meant, but also what other kind of saints mean. And I think that film, if you happen to speak Spanish, it's on YouTube. That tells you a lot about why it is that Maradona can have that impact. And it does it in a very simple way. I've seen The Hand of the Gods as well. That, again, is really interesting because all these kind of, like you said, all these freestyle footballers traveling basically from, I think they start in New York or somewhere in the US, and they're trying to get all the way down to Buenos Aires to meet him. And again, that sense of devotion and pilgrimage and mission kind of dovetails with the film I've just seen, and how just some five guys who are incredible at doing tricks feel that they have to somehow gain something, or they will gain something just by meeting Maradona. And who knows, showing him a trick or, you know, hearing something from him. So I think, you know, a lot of the films that you watch with him or about him are dealing with those aspects of religiosity, devotion, what he means, how meaning is placed on him, how people remember him, you know, or remembered what he did when he was alive. Yeah, I mean, again, all these things, you know, build the cultural repertoire. You know, and this is why we have Maradonology. You know, this is why we're doing this podcast, isn't it? You know, so there's so much out there. Those are just a few.
What do we say? I mean, Maradona is always culturally relevant. I think another one that I've got on my list is I think Deism produced one called Maradona the Fall, which looks quite interesting. I think it's more about him in the 90s. But I'll definitely be chasing your path of this episode, Pete, for that one about the piece of wood that looks like Maradona celebrating. Love that. To finish up, because I think we've run over well over an hour now, thinking about the up close and personal style of this movie, the grittiness, and admittedly a large part of that is with the archival footage that they were able to source. But thinking about the history of football now, are there any other individuals, and I know the answer already because no one compares to Maradona really in this regard, but are there any other individuals, be that manager, player, or any other, you know, football related person that you think would suit having that story told like this in this kind of documentary? Because for me, Maradona, it's not just his footballing achievements that make for a good documentary. It's not just his off the field behavior either. It's everything combined. It's his personality, the time period, the political awareness with him being in the absolute perfect city with the perfect team for all of this to coalesce into something completely magnetic. I can't think of too many footballers like that that would make for this so enthralling a documentary. But what about you, Stephen? Is there a footballer that comes to mind that you think this style of documentary would make for a good watch?
The one that automatically springs to mind for me is Garrincha. You know, it's just got so many facets to his life, the alcoholism, the wives, the children, the father, the fact that as a nation is melting down on the basis of having just lost the 1950 World Cup to Uruguay on home soil, everyone's losing it around him. He's kind of like, it's just football, I'm off fishing. It's all of everything that surrounds it, this indelible talent that he's got, the knees that go in the same direction, the bandy legs, everything about Garrincha is utterly fascinating. And, as a character, I think a lot of people don't even scratch the surface on what lies beneath that story. I would dearly love, one on Garrincha.
Excellent. I think for me, before you jump in, Pete, for me, I'm going to stay Brazilian and go Socrates. I think I would devour a documentary about it, both his achievements, ability, and Corinthians democracy. I think that would be a very, very different movie, but I think that would be well worth a watch, and I would love that. What about you, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, Steve's Nick Garrincha, that was the one that came to my mind. Feels like George Best needs one, in terms of that kind of the off-field as much as the on. The one man, the country played for, the talent, the fifth Beatle, or all that kind of thing. I feel the sad thing is I feel there's so many legendary figures who were more than life, but they've kind of gone. It feels like a lot of that time period, the way the professionalisation of football has destroyed that. But I'm thinking of people like, there's a guy called Corbata, who was an Argentinian winger who was barely literate, ended up kind of terribly drunk. I think he died in, the stadium or the underbelly of the stadium. He had to stay in like a kind of changing room, because he was such a great, so they tried to help him out. There are those kind of stories. Charo Moreno, was a real character apparently. But, there is no footage. You just have to dig around the archives to find things about them. Andrade, the great Brazilian, the great Uruguayan player in the 1924, 28, 1930 Olympic Games and World Cup, sounded like an incredible figure. There is so little footage of that. The little bits that exist are just so tantalizing. But here and there are stories. That's kind of part of the joy of what I do, is looking through all these newspapers, all these old histories. And every now and again, you find a story, a snippet, something like that. But yeah, I think it's hard to think, if you think about people that are just not, they're not just footballers, they're more than that. They're cultural icons, they're off the pitch. Then, those kind of guys, I think Best, Socrates is a great shout, Garrincha is a great shout. There is a documentary about Heleno de Freitas, who was an incredibly charismatic Brazilian guy who was a hero at Botafogo. He ends up in the El Dorado League playing for Junior briefly. Tries to run off with his salary too early. Eventually dies, I think, from syphilis, the complications from that. So there is a doc. I haven't watched it. It is in Brazilian. It's in Portuguese. But I suspect that would be an incredibly colourful story as well, because there are a lot of stories about him. But yeah, somehow I think that, stories about some of the guys that we see today, the Jack Grealish biography, by Asif Kapadia. Not sure it's going to happen.
Well, it wouldn't be quite the same, would it? Well, I mean, they're all good answers. I think I'd watch them all. And so to finish this up, I think you'll both agree with me when I say that for my money, Maradona is the single most captivating individual that has ever played the game of football. For better and for worse, and he was beyond fascinatingly talented and flawed and a player that could only have existed when he did. And his story, I think this is the best football documentary ever made. And I think it's going to be very difficult to follow this with our next bunch of episodes after this. It's that kind of documentary that I think when it finishes, you just kind of want to sit with it and process what you've seen. And I'm going to finish this episode with a quote taken from a wonderful obituary by Argentinian writer Marcela Mora y Jarajo, which is published by The Guardian about Maradona, where she said, "He was a perfect embodiment of the human ability to be contradictory, to do and convey ugly and beautiful at once, good and evil in the same stroke. His celebrity was not separate from his private self. He was achingly human in every way, yet a superstar at all times. And that's Maradona." Thank you, Pete. Thank you, Stephen. It's been a great chat. And thank you, everyone else, for tuning in. And we'll see you next time.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.